Non-Toxic Southern Oregon is an initiative started with Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. Their goal is to create safe, toxic-free public spaces at schools, parks, and along public roads. Joining me this morning are Christina Lefevre, the president of Rogue Valley Pollinator Project. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And also with Non-Toxic Southern Oregon, working with them, and Dr. Ray Seidler, who spent many years at Oregon State University and the Environmental Protection Agency. Welcome to you.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning.
Well, it's good to have you folks here to talk about this. And our first question, we were talking a little bit about off the air about how these organizations are kind of coming together and working on that. I can't explain it. I'm hoping that you can. Go ahead, Christina.
Sure, that would be great. It is getting a little convoluted. So I can wear two hats in this conversation. I am with Pollinator Project Rogue Valley, and I'm also a board member of Beyond Toxics. Very honored to be that. Beyond Toxics is a statewide environmental justice organization, and they have an office in Phoenix. In fact, Pollinator Project Rogue Valley, also known as PPRV, we are in their office, and so we work together very closely. One of the team members in the Non-Toxic Roadsides project that we're working on, Bianca Ballara. She is the BT staff member, and she's in the office. So having this, the resources, the support, the strength of Beyond Toxics working on this with Pollinator Project Rogue Valley and other community members, we have created a group that we have called Non-Toxic Southern Oregon, because that's where we are, which is actually a part of a greater vision of Beyond Toxics, which is called Non-Toxic Oregon. And obviously, we're wanting to eradicate as much as possible the pesticides used in schools, parks, public areas where people play and walk. And then we also want to address, in this case, what we're talking about is roadsides. And so we have a Non-Toxic Southern Oregon that's part of Non-Toxic Oregon. And then within the Non-Toxic Southern Oregon, we are addressing cities and schools. But today, we're talking about roadsides. So we're Non-Toxic Roadsides today. Does that make sense?
Yes, it'll be on the exam at the end. Tell me a little bit about how prevalent this spraying is. I was really surprised to learn that nationwide, there's a whole bunch of different standards on who sprays and what they spray and how they eradicate vegetation on the side of roadways. I really thought there was probably some federal standards. Maybe there are. I don't know. But what's the situation here in the Rogue Valley?
Milt, there are both federal as well as state standards on that. So when you, for example, when you buy a container of a pesticide, and I'll come back and define that in a moment, it comes with a label, and that label is actually a contract. That label has been approved at the federal EPA level, and it describes how to dilute the material, how much to use, how to dilute it, how to store it, how to dispose of it, and the like. And then for decades, it has said, you know, if you get it in your eyes, wash it out. If you don't get it on your skin, don't inhale it. Nothing much has changed there with regards to these fundamental directions for decades. So a state can up the ante and put on, for example, this particular pesticide cannot be sprayed within 100 feet of a creek, et cetera.
I see.
That could be a little bit higher requirement than the federal requirements.
So you can't go against the federal requirements, but you could augment it at a local level.
Exactly. Yes, that is correct. And the point I want to make about these labels that hardly anyone understands. They only describe, as I said, how to use it, how to store it, how to dispose of it, and short-term acute effects. There's nothing that is mentioned about, for example, may cause long-term effects dealing with birth defects, with neurological issues, with cancer issues, kidney disease, liver disease. None of that is mentioned, although as a scientist, I can tell you that there are issues, there are problems. The scientific community worldwide understands that there are problems. It's just not reflected on the labels.
I wanted to ask, maybe this sort of dovetails into this about accumulated poisons. One concern, of course, is that some of these get into our streams and our rivers. Is it a matter of concentration in a particular area or disbursement over a wide area? I'm thinking flow rate here, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or is it both of those things?
No, absolutely, it is both of those things. So, for example, a pesticide may be sprayed on a corner close to a bridge, and under the bridge there is a little creek. So the pesticide will sit along the roadside where it's been placed. First thing that happens, if it's a dry day like today, it dries out and becomes more concentrated. It goes from a liquid state to a powder state. Someone walks through that. They're exposed, they get it on their shoes, their lower pants, it comes home to the, exposes the child, etc. The next rainfall event, that pesticide is going to move. And of course, it moves downhill with the stream. And it can either be physically or chemically trapped in the soil or on residue of plants and the like. But ultimately, with enough rain and enough pesticide, it enters the creek and then it gets dispersed. So we have become, during this study that we did, aware of some separate studies that were done by another group in the valley, and Christina might explain who those people are. And grab samples are taken several times of the year, and a lot of pesticides have been detected. Fortunately, the detection levels have been low based upon EPA requirements of industry to evaluate the safety. And they say, well, maybe one unit is safe, and you find a half a unit in a creek, therefore we're safe. Mm-hmm. But that's an incorrect extension of reality.
So in a particular case, you could be, you know, upstream, a community could be using a lot of toxic substances to try to control, eradicate vegetation by the roadside. It gets into the water supply, into a creek or a stream or a river, probably. I don't know if it would be applicable in a river here, but in some cases it could be, you could be doing damage to communities downstream from you that are even greater than where you're at. Is that correct?
Well, one of the things that we're actually focusing on is not necessarily community use, but the actual roadsides. So Jackson County Roads is an entity that has been around for, I don't know how long, decades. And so it is a governmental entity. We pay taxes to support Jackson County Roads. They're doing a great job with their job, which is to keep the roadsides clear for visual, for, you know, fire, et cetera. So, yes, communities can certainly do damage, but what we're wanting to address here is that the roadsides, there's 600 miles of roads, county roads, and we're talking county roads. I want to get clear here. This is not the DOT, you know, I-5. This is not, you know. So we're talking county roads. There's a map of county roads. So there's 600 miles. And what we've looked at is what is happening along those roadsides based on Jackson County Roads' work, which is, we respect what they're trying to do. What we're wanting to do is raise the conversation about how they're doing this. And we are coming forward to say that there are better ways than using how many gallons of herbicides?
2,500 plus gallons.
And that's
concentrated, concentrated herbicide.
And that's in a year. How do we know that? We requested spray records from, it was earlier this year, and so it was from April 2018 through April 2019 that we acquired these 12 months of spray records. And so we know from those handwritten spray records, handwritten with lots of little abbreviations, how much was applied, and I have to say that a number of the records were missing information. And we have a wonderful team member who compiled all of that into an Excel spreadsheet, and we created a report, and that's how Ray knows to say that number. Would you say that number again?
That number is 2,500 gallons of concentrated sprayed pesticides.
And then the ratio, once it's diluted, what's that work out to? Is there like...
Yeah, it's diluted a magnitude of 50 times or so. So the volume is way up there.
And so if that was applied with the various other chemicals that are included so that it, you know, it can flow out of the tank or whatever, whatever. So we calculated about how much quantity and how much coverage that would be. So what is that number?
Well, we thanks to all of the work that Elisa has done to digitize its handwritten materials, as Christina said, we could say that there are approximately 20 middle schools and high schools in this county, public middle schools, public high schools, and if they each had one football field, the amount of spray that has gone out on those county roads would be equal to hitting each one of those 20 fields 100 times in a year, 100 times on each of the 20 football fields in the public schools is the equivalent area that the county is spraying on about a 5 or 6 or 7 foot strip along the sides of the road.
So one of the things that we're wanting to do, as I said, raising this conversation so that people can become aware, is that I wonder, this is my personal question, if the roads, the applicators are using just handwritten records, how is it known in quantity, total quantity? I mean, who is actually looking at these records? Because it is not compiled in any way that you can sort and, you know, recreate reports. But other cities, other countries, other counties have already done this kind of thing. And so what we're asking, in addition to considering what Ray has just told us, and we haven't even talked about the kinds of herbicides are being used yet, what we're asking is why can we not see the types of reports that the people should be able to see? We're asking for some transparency. And at some point, I'm sure you're going to ask us what kind of herbicides are being used.
Yes, I am. First of all, I'm going to say if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-838-3760 or during the live broadcast this morning, an email to jx@jeffnet.org. We do have Cynthia on the line in Talent. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Hi there. I love what you guys are focusing on and bringing attention to. I guess my frustration with a lot of these conversations is, you know, solutions, because nobody wants to be using poisons if they can avoid it. But I know that a lot of the trimming and mowing that would be done as an alternative to spraying is also, you know, polluting, not only for climate change, but for, you know, diesel is a known carcinogen. And so for the people using, you know, mowers and whatnot, it tends to be a blind spot because it's so, you know, commonly done. But we really need to get away from fossil fuels as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you would be recommending goats or scything or, you know, or putting down permanent barriers, concrete or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I just would like to see more focus on solutions that really are solutions and not just a different kind of pollutant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that question. And I would like to say that before we finish today, I'm going to remind my colleague, Christina, that she's going to make an important first-time announcement about this 20-page report that we have prepared, where it's going to be. And in that report from the caller's question, those questions are directly addressed. We're not just here to complain about pesticides. We are here to offer some potential solutions. The person that prepared the digitized analyses of all of that handwritten data has the expertise based on her former job that she's retired from in the state of Washington Department of Transportation. And in this report, she states clearly several paragraphs of what the alternatives are to the use of pesticides, and those alternatives are already in practice in other areas of the Northwest.
We have on the line Lisa from Eugene. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning, and thank you all for hosting this program. This is Lisa Arkin. I'm executive director of Beyond Toxics, and I appreciate all the information being brought forward by Ray and by Christina. And I just want to say, in response to the former caller, that there's great things happening in other locations in Oregon, and Lane County is a primary example. Compared to the 2,000 gallons that were applied of herbicide that were applied in Jackson County, according to the report, only 7.6 gallons were used in 2018 throughout the entire county of Lane, which is bigger than Jackson County. And the reason for that is because there's a policy that the county has adopted to prioritize mechanical removal of weeds, and that all the focus is on only very aggressive noxious weeds, and they combine that with seeding and replanting and protection of water, pollinators, people, and especially children waiting at school bus stops. Lane County has no spray truck. Everything's done with a backpack spray because there's so little spray being done. But the best thing is, and one of the best things, is that all of this is reported out to the public on a very comprehensive website. You can look at maps, you can see where they applied, and you can also work with the county to make sure that herbicide spray is not done where locations you are concerned about might be. So I think there are great models to be followed elsewhere in the state.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, ask you about some of these alternatives that we have. And I know that, as the caller mentioned in Talent, that sometimes there's no free lunch. You're going to have a certain amount of downside no matter what you do. But at the same time, what kind of alternatives are we looking at? Are there various options that we would have available here in Jackson and Josephine counties?
Well, first off, I just want to say that neither Ray nor I are experts on roadside maintenance, so I'm sure that's obvious. But we do know there are other options. Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District has a lot of smart people, and they understand how to deal with native plants and water catchment and movement. And as we've talked about, there's other cities, counties that have looked at this. So if we begin to just have a conversation so that we can look at what some of these alternatives are, and using our roadsides rather than, you know, it has to be clear. What if we're planting native plants that are going to be more beneficial for pollinators, the other wildlife, and those native plants could also help catch the water and filter the water so that it goes into our landscape in a much slower way rather than just running off with all the sediment that has herbicides contained in that. And then I love the fact that Lisa says what Lane County has done. They went through the same process a few decades ago, actually. It took a long time for all the conversation to come to fruition to create an integrative vegetation management plan, which is something that Jackson County lacks. So I don't know if we can sit here and tell everybody all the alternatives, because there are different ones for different places. And I will be the first to say that if we ever can eradicate 100% of the herbicides used, I would be shocked. There's a reality here. So there are places sometimes that it needs to be used. But we can do a lot better than what we're talking about now. And there are other people that can help us get there.
I love seeing a herd of goats. I don't know if herd is the right term for goats, but I love seeing them at work. I mean, that's wonderful, a creative alternative. And we've talked we talked off air that sometimes you can't get a mower into certain spaces because of the steepness of the bank or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we probably can't get to 100% eradication, but we can make some progress forward. Had a comment or a question from Greg in Ashland. He just wanted to know, are we spraying mainly pesticides or herbicides?
I was going to clarify that at the beginning, and I kind of forgot. So the term pesticides is a general overall description. Pesticide means you're going to kill a pest, and it's typically a chemical or it's a living organism. We're talking about chemicals today. So if you're going to kill an insect, it's an insecticide. If you're going to kill a weed, it's an herbicide. So we're talking about herbicides, which is one kind of a pesticide.
It's a subset of it.
A subset, exactly right.
Are some of the same chemicals used for both? In other words, if your intent was to kill a pest as opposed mm-hmm. to, you know.
Okay, the chemical pesticides that are manufactured, sadly, are never 100% specific intended to a given species of a pest. So one may ask the question, why do we have a concern with weed killers? Herbicides are weed killers, but they don't just kill weeds. They kill insects. They injure and cause disease and illnesses mm-hmm. in animals, in wildlife, aquatic life, and yes, cancer in humans. And speaking of humans and all of the effects, the two most common weed killers that are used by the county are something called diuron and glyphosate. Glyphosate is number one, diuron is number two, and if you look at the literature, they're both called presumed, likely, probable human carcinogens.
In the little time we have left, just a couple of minutes, so where do we go from here? What's the next step for you folks?
Great. Thank you so much for asking. I think this has been a great first step, just raising people's awareness that we do have an issue, I think, that we can easily begin to address. It's going to be a long conversation, and we're asking the Jackson County Commissioners to add this topic to their work session agenda so that we can bring in people, experts from Lane County Roads, Washington DOT, who has made big progress on looking at their practices. And Portland Metro has also offered to come in. All three of these agencies have offered to come in and actually speak with our commissioners and our roadsides. Portland Metro has done a fabulous job creating a way to create a report for transparency. So we're asking our community to talk to their commissioners and say yes, we want this conversation to begin. We have a Facebook page called Non-Toxic Southern Oregon. There's a form there that you can go to and sign, and we can begin to tabulate and add everyone's addresses and comments. We're going to have our report out there on that Facebook page later today for people to look at. We have a website, beyondtoxics.org/nontoxicsouthernoregon, so that you can find out more information. And show up at a county commissioner meeting. We're going to be there every Wednesday starting at 9:30. Come earlier if you want to speak. Wear green to show your support.
This morning we've had Christina Lefevre and Dr. Ray Seidler and from Eugene, Lisa Arkin, visiting with us about this issue. Thank you for being here this morning.